Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
There's a tradition of comedians going from stand-up to sitcoms. Think of Bob Newhart or Jerry Seinfeld. Aziz Ansari is ready to play in that league. After making a reputation on stage, he was cast on Amy Poehler's Parks and Recreation, where he played an Indian-American who took the phony name Tom Haverford to boost his career in government. And he was kind of an idiot.
Every day, I start by hitting up Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. Sometimes, I like to throw in LinkedIn. For the professional shouties.
Ansari's new show is Master of None. He's the creator and star, and he plays a character much closer to himself. A decent, well-meaning guy named Dev. A young actor struggling to make a place for himself.
Our dads are so weird. I told my dad I got a call back on The Sickening.
Oh, the Black Virus movie? That's great.
Thank you. I told him, he's like, okay, can you fix my iPad? How about, hey, son, great work, or, hey, son, I'm proud of you.
I have never, ever heard my dad say the word proud. It's always like, that's it? So that's all you've done? Like, if I went to the moon, he would honestly be like, when are you going to Mars?
Yeah. Oh, Brian, you went to the moon? That's like graduating from community college. When are you going to graduate from Harvard, a.k.a. go to Pluto?
Ansari came to The New Yorker recently to talk with staff writer Sarah Larson.
One of the things I really like about your show is that the characters seem to have a lot of freedom to do fun, inventive, weird things and not have it blow up in their face. Like, I love the episode where there's a sort of first date that they fly to Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel like if that happened on a regular sitcom, first of all, it wouldn't happen. Secondly, if they did, it would just be to show what fools they are. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It would be kind of like, oh, this was a terrible idea. But actually, this charming scenario plays out and they have all these fun and funny adventures. They get to know each other. And there's a little problem at the end, but it's not because they're idiots for having taken a first date to Nashville, you know?
Yeah. You know, these two people, they get along and there is this banter and all this, but there's a certain moments that are a little uncomfortable.
Right.
Like when Dev makes the joke about her being vegetarian and she's kind of
Well, he realizes that she is vegetarian. I mean, they do have this intimacy and they do really like each other, but there they are in this barbecue place.
You want to split a Pitmaster combo? Drummies and ribs?
Oh, no, I can't do that.
Why not?
I'm kind of a vegetarian.
No! Are you serious? There was a big debate in the writer's room. Can we make Rachel vegetarian? Is that making her too unlikable? Would Dev ever date someone? And
well, as a vegetarian, I feel like this is one of the nicer portraits of vegetarianism that I've seen in popular culture.
Really?
Yeah. I love the structure of the show, which has each episode is a different topic, basically. Mm-hmm. How did you arrive at that structure?
At a certain point when we were writing the series, we realized, oh, this show is more like my stand-up than a series in that each mm-hmm. episode is kind of about one of these topics and it really explores it. It allowed us to do that by doing things like we don't have an ensemble that shows up every week. You know,
yeah.
in most shows like this, you see the same four friends eating dinner together every
right.
week. And at a certain point when we were writing, we're like, you don't see the same four people all the time in your real life. You have different groups of friends that
right.
come in and out of your life. And, you know, you look at something like Alan wrote on Parks and Rec, and I think that becomes kind of a strange challenge at times where it's like, you know, there'd be times when we were filming Parks and Rec where I'd be like, why is Tom here right now? He doesn't need to be here. There's no way.
Why does he even still work in this department, and what is his job?
He quit.
Exactly.
He's not supposed to be around these people all the time. This doesn't make sense.
Who cares? And also, I feel like it's a structure that has empathy built into it a little bit because you really look at things from other people's perspective. The episode about women, I mean, you cover some of that in your stand-up, too.
Mm-hmm.
Those feel like it came out of conversations with women about their experiences, being
yeah.
followed by creepy guys coming home from a bar or...
Yeah, and, you know, we had women in the writer's room that we would have long conversations about this stuff. And, you know, one of the women told me when she leaves a bar at night, she would walk in the middle of the street and dial 911
yeah.
just in case.
Right.
And so we put that in there.
Yeah.
And the argument at the very end, I think, is really what that episode is about. And the argument at the end is a group of people are sitting at the table, me, my girlfriend in the show, and my other friend Denise and the other guys' characters. And the director of this commercial that I worked on shakes our hands but doesn't shake the women's hands.
What?
You didn't notice that? That guy only introduced himself to the men at the table. He went right past us, like Denise and I were invisible.
Yeah, he totally snubbed us.
I don't know. I don't think that was intentional. You guys were sitting in the corner. He was probably just in a rush.
Yeah, well, in his rush, he managed to shake hands with two random dudes and Arnold. He didn't think we were important enough.
I don't know. Seems like he might be reading a bit much into it.
We're telling you that this is something that definitely happens to women all the time. But fine, deny our perception of the world.
Here's my issue. He just went to the bathroom, washed his hands, and they're still wet. I don't want to shake no wet hands.
And that scene, there was a split in the room of even amongst the women in the writer's room. That, like, some people were like, well, I see where he's coming from. And then some of the women were like, no, that happens to me. Like, that definitely happens. And I was like, and they were like, we got to change it. It's very ambiguous. And I was like, no, this is actually perfect. That's great. Like, it shouldn't be clear. The point is just to not immediately dismiss someone when they say
right.
something affected them that way, and to actually hear them out and see what they have to say.
Can we talk about R. Kelly a little bit?
R. Kelly?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you have done a lot of great comedic stuff about R. Kelly, and you've been a fan of R. Kelly, and our feelings culturally have changed about R. Kelly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I read this piece in New York Magazine that was really interesting about basically just asking the question, like, knowing, like, the shadiness of what's going on there.
Yeah. Well, he's had a lot of rape allegations and settlements and
brutal
video
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the worst stuff.
Right.
Yeah, like when you hear Ignition come on, is it right to just be happy about that?
Right.
That's a hard question. I mean,
asked
I think the answer is
that same question.
Yeah, the answer is kind of no.
Right. Right.
I mean, like the Cosby Show. It's like I don't know if anyone's going to watch that show anymore.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if a generation is going to like. We're the last people alive that are going to know that Monopoly scene in the Cosby Show. We're the last people. Like, I don't think anyone's going to raise their children
or
and be like,
Ray
hey,
Charles
you got to check out. You got to check out yeah. the Cosby Show.
Right. Right. Right.
You know what's interesting is. I was talking to these kids who are maybe 14, 15 years old. They're my manager's – one of my manager's kids. They came to one of my stand-up shows, and I was asking them about stand-up shows they watched.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought up, like, Eddie Murphy Delirious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, I tried to watch that. And they're like, I couldn't make it through it, all the homophobia. And I was like, wow, that's incredible
right.
to hear
yeah.
a young person say that.
Mm.
I couldn't imagine a kid that age saying that
right.
20, 30 years ago.
No.
It was an interesting thing to see, you know?
Things have changed a lot in the last
Yeah, and
10,
I think even
20,
Eddie Murphy is yeah. like, hey, I was 22 years old when right. I did that special,
yeah.
and I said some stupid stuff.
Right.
And it was a different time, and you know.
Yeah.
There's things in my first stand-up specials, I'm sure if I went back now, I'd probably change things or adjust things based on kind of growing as a person.
I was thinking about... I read your piece in the New York Times about race and casting.
Oh, thanks.
It was quite good. And the end was so great and so interesting. And when you just kind of said people will, you know, accept lots of things. There's kind of like give us, a, you know, like Arnold Schwarzenegger as a robot, for example, you know, like a robot with a crazy Austrian accent. Like and I think there's a sense of relief when actual casting of not just a lot of good-looking white guys, straight white guys, when other kinds of people are cast, people like that. You know, audiences are thought to want a certain kind of thing, what we've had forever.
Mm-hmm.
But there's huge sense of relief and joy when we get Empire or when we get a show like yours.
Yeah, I think a lot of those people that make those decisions operate from a place of fear.
Right.
And they're not operating from a place of creative excitement.
Right.
And
yeah.
I operate from that place.
Exactly.
And if you operate from creative excitement, you believe in what you're making and you believe that if it's good, people are going to watch it. I think sometimes people are scared and I've heard people say things like, well, when someone watches a show, they need to see someone that they can kind of imagine as their person in
mm-hmm.
the show
mm-hmm.
or, you know, there's horrifying things of people being like, well, this character needs to be really hot. You know, everyone needs to want to have sex with that character.
Mm-hmm.
We need to sexy up this guy or girl. I mean, it's more often these are things said about female characters, of course. But
mm-hmm.
And none of that, I don't buy any of it. I just don't, especially after Master of None.
Yeah.
Because, you know what, Indians on TV, you'd show that to someone and they'd be like, I mean, who's going to relate to this? This is such a specific issue about your, I don't know.
Like, yeah.
Basically what they're saying is they say things like, well, I don't know if mainstream audiences will enjoy that. And what that basically means is I'm not sure white people are going to relate to that.
Right.
Guess what? White people relate to anything. If it's good, well-written, right. You have good characters, a compelling story, you relate to anything. People watch anime movies about bugs and fish. They're relating to those problems.
Yeah.
Because all these things, ultimately, Indians on TV, we've all had a version
exactly.
of feeling like
yeah.
that, regardless yeah. of right. your race mm-hmm. or ethnicity. And I think the other thing is I think Master of None feels authentic because it's written by me and Alan. And so
right.
that's our story. It's
right.
not like a white guy. If a white guy wrote right. Indians on TV, it would be horrible. It would be so bad. If a white guy
it's
wrote
racist.
Parents,
no.
it would be terrible. You know, it'd be. I mean, maybe it wouldn't be terrible. Maybe if they were really interviewed, you know, me and Alan for a long time about our stories and then wrote that episode, they
yeah.
might have been able to pull it off. But it's just so much more real coming from us. And I think also me and Alan, our real life, we do have a mix of people like that. You know,
right.
when Alan and I hang out, there is an Indian guy and an Asian guy. My world is diverse like that.
Yeah.
There's sometimes people watch a show down, they're like, oh, it's all white people. And sometimes that is a valid criticism of like, really, there's just white people and this is kind of a bummer to not see any diversity. But then you watch, like, it's not the answer. I also think is not like you watch, like if Seinfeld came out today, I think it should be those same four white people.
Yeah.
And that's his world, and that's what's
what
happening.
What about girls?
Girls, well, I think that's her world. I do see four white girls having brunch together a lot. I see that quite a bit. So I don't think
here
that
in
rings
New York?
As, yes, I don't think it rings as phony. I have seen four white girls hang out together.
Yes.
So I think the criticism of
that's
girls
happened.
Is you know,
yeah.
of just saying like, oh, she just put four white girls. Whatever, like that's her show. Like, you know, and you know what we need is you need more people that are coming up to get in a position where they can make their own
yes.
show, you know?
Right.
So maybe in a year or whenever or tomorrow, we'll see a show with four Asian girls hanging out. I'd love to see that show.
Yeah.
That's the other great thing about this stuff is you realize we've told so many stories about white people.
Right.
There's an infinite
exactly.
number of stories left.
Right, right.
And as more people come up and pursue careers like mine and are from different backgrounds, we'll see more of them.
So you don't know yet if are you making a second season?
We haven't heard officially, but I think things are in
Looks
our favor
good.
To do one.
Yeah.
yeah.
Do you have thoughts about where you might want to take it?
Honestly, it's hard for me because I'm so tapped at the moment. Like,
yeah.
I dumped my whole head into this first season of the show. And so if we did a second season, I would just need some time or else I would freak out that what we're making wouldn't be as good as the first season.
So you want to take a little break and just kind of recharge?
Yeah, because otherwise, what would second season be about? It'd be a guy promoting season one of his show.
Yeah, it would be interesting.
It would just be Dev doing podcasts and radio shows.
Thanks for coming in, Aziz.
Thank you for having me.
Comedian Aziz Ansari, talking with The New Yorker's Sarah Larson. The show is called Master of None.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.